I'm Ryan Dombrowski.
I'm the Ninja Fat Man from Doom Ninja Podcast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, dudes and dudettes, you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Noel Clark. Don't you ever, ever, ever touch that dial.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I like it with the helmet on.
And Keir Hansen.
And that's why, to this day, I can't eat cotton candy.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 213 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where nothing says worst first date faster than a harrowing trip through a tear in the fabric of space-time to the inner sanctum of your mortal enemy. Seriously, they didn't even offer to pick up the tab. I've been on worse first dates. I am your host, Haley, and with me in the GPR studios this week, we have Keir. How are you today, Keir?
I've got this kind of burning sensation in my chest, but I think that's just reflux from the shrimp tacos.
Yeah, it's just because you're old. Also we have Jay. How are you today, Jay?
I'm rethinking my exotic trip first date idea now. Well, this week we're returning to the perils of April and Ram squaring off face to face with the Shadow King once again in the fifth episode of the Class series, Bravish Hearts. As we set the stage in the previous episode, the two young lovers are on the Shadowkin home turf this time, leaving parents with a lot of questions, Quill dealing with unraveling the mystery of the governors, and the whole of London dealing with bloodthirsty flower blossoms. It's been a busy week.
Yeah. Anyone else hearing, "Feed me, Seymour," in the background?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I thought. Especially when you mentioned the Venus flytraps, I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, as Haley and I talked about a couple weeks back, this was kind of an eager conclusion to this little two-parter, unexpected two-parter. And, yeah, and we kept remarking on the fact that there were so many plates spinning. So how do we feel they did in terms of pinning all this together and all these disparate stories?
So I got mixed up in my viewing order, and I didn't get to see episode 4 before I watched this one. So coming in cold turkey, it took me forever to figure out what the heck was going on. Like I was at a complete
missed something.
Loss.
Who's the old guy? April's dead. He's a roadie.
But I mean, that being said, like coming in with no information prior to it, I was able to figure out what was going on. Like it wasn't that I was at a complete loss the entire time. It just took me longer to figure it out than I would have liked. But you know,
they didn't spend too long. I mean, as far as you know, scenes from the previous, they don't really waste a lot of time on that. This is really just it's not to help anybody who missed it. It's really just a refresher for the folks who watched the week prior.
Exactly.
And nothing more. But Haley, I mean, you and I were kind of invested in this and wanting to see how this thing was going to turn out. How did it strike you?
They did kind of tie the flower thing in a little bit, I guess, with that other storyline, which was something we weren't sure they were going to do.
It seemed almost like a kind of a red herring villain through all
this.
More
of a pink herring.
Yeah, sort of a nice peachy pink. Because it was, you know, in terms of some of the final exposition that we got from Dorothy of the governors, that okay, well, we learned after the fact that they were really just one shared consciousness. So you know, you could have just used one Rhodian soul to defeat the whole thing. Sorry, guys, you know,
But we and got it turned out to be his mom.
We corrected. We got some great data. So that's a plus. Hey, you know. But yeah, so it really kind of came down more to, well, somewhat resolving the April and the Shadow King symbiosis. It's not completely over, but we've been able to at least break a lot of the psychic bond. So now they're just dependent on each other's continued existence. Mm-hmm. So how bad could that be if the Shadow King is just rotting in a tomb
somewhere? Well, we won't have to deal with it again this season, at least, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know. They've invested a lot in this arc. I don't think we're done. And for those of you who are watching along with us, I'm really surprised that you've been able to pace yourself, number one. And number two, we have done an exceptional job of trying to avoid most spoilers for everything that has aired to date. Something got a little ruined for me a couple days ago because it was kind of considered outside the statute of limitations on spoilers on a global basis. But
hasn't even aired yet. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, thanks, Canada. All right. So, I mean, as far as using April's newfound power as the king slash queen of
king.
The Shadow
She's
King.
King.
She's just king.
Yep. But Tanya at the end says, you are such a queen. And I don't think that was an insult. I think she was actually complimenting her on that. Has now given her the, I guess she can hear all of their voices in her head. That can't go over well.
Yeah.
Millions of bloodthirsty souls from the underneath, which I thought was a great concept.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I give Ness a lot of credit for being able to create a villain species from scratch and really kind of give it an interesting world to play in. I'm kind of hoping we're not done with it because I think that's still got some promise to it. But what about dealing with everything that evolved between, I was going to say Charlie and Quill, but it's really Charlie and Mateus and Quill as far as some of their real, what began as just an obvious kind of, you know, the genocide decision. And then it emerged into a lot more as tensions built and things got heated. What was your take on all this new stuff we've gotten, especially from Quill?
You know, I feel like we got a new side of Quill that we hadn't seen before. Like, it was something that we always knew was lurking under the surface, but she'd never let anyone see before. And that's the, you know, the damaged, hurt, mourning person. You know, she lost her entire species, and this is the first time we've ever seen that rattle her.
Yeah, she's said it. You know, she's screamed it at him enough times. I mean, she wears it on her sleeve, but she shed tears on this one. She was near a breakdown, which I thought was really impactful. And yet, just as we've talked about all along, thankfully, it did not change her character.
Mm-hmm.
She is still as acidic and hateful.
Yeah. And you know? But I mean, if anything, it served to underscore her character. You know, it took everything that we've seen so far, and it's like, yes, this is how she is. This is why she's that way. She's not going to change, but now you know why she's that way, or can feel it better, or whatever it is.
Right. Did you notice that it was almost, the way she delivered it was almost kind of a throwaway line when she was talking about Charlie's relationship with Mateus, or the, you know, the fact that there are sacrifices and things. And she said, I know what love is. I felt it once. She just moves back on. Yeah. Got it. It's not important. I'm a warrior.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot more to her backstory that hopefully will get dribbled out over a long period of time. I don't want a whole info dump in one episode and it's like, hey, now you know everything there is to know about her. But little instances like this go a long way for developing her character.
Yeah. I think with particular emphasis on the fact that she our representative from the governors both had the intent of wanting to utilize this weapon, obviously for different ends, but all of that, you know, dragging out that moment of unleashing the final weapon, you know, her comment about, what was it? She said, as Charlie has to go through, I state my intent. Right. You know, this, that, the other thing. Oh, God. Hell's bells. I forgot how up themselves the Rhodians are. You know, yep. In the middle of all this, as this glowing ball of hell is about to unleash, and she's commenting on pomp and circumstance. That's entirely Quill. But
well, because the audience is thinking it at the moment, so somebody has to say it.
Yeah, she is absolutely always the voice of. All right, move this along. Can we just?
Yeah, well, her or Tanya is always saying exactly what the audience is thinking.
Yes,
yeah, pretty much.
And Tanya, I give her so much credit in this episode. Well, looking back, I've seen this all along. It always becomes the great summarizer, because she talks 10 times faster than anyone else. She doesn't have the patience with a lot of flowery language.
Yeah.
So someone comes in and says, what the hell's going on in here? And she just, bup, 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 bup. Oh, okay, got it, thanks.
And she's a smart enough character that we believe that she's got that kind of handle on it too. So it doesn't seem out of character.
Yeah, and she had that great line through this one. I'm really glad my mom wasn't here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Her mom is the only one at this point that doesn't know what's going on.
That's true, yeah.
Can you imagine what's going to happen when she does find out, though? Holy hell.
Do you think... Well, I got a feeling they need to keep some adults on the outside. There has to be the one, you know, voice of the uninitiated through there.
Yeah.
Because at this point, they're just bringing more and more people into the fold, and you don't want a whole troop of them knowing, oh, you know, what kind of slug monsters are you dealing with this week, or what have you, as they come home exhausted, bloody, bruised.
I don't know. All the parents on Teen Wolf know at this point.
Yes. Well, thankfully, this is not Teen Wolf. Thankfully.
I don't know. It seems like everyone in Britain at this point should kind of know what's going on, though, right?
Nope.
Nah. Nope.
There have been skinned bodies laying in the streets now, and it's going to be absolutely fine.
It's a flash mob or something. That's all it is. I'm just going to go back and have my tea and forget about it.
Oh, it must
go down to the Winchester, have a pint.
Pieces.
Just wait for the whole thing to blow over.
So the only thing in this episode that was really kind of sticking out to me, and Haley, I was talking about this with you in the previous episode, was April's mom and dad. And how that still felt a little clunky. I mean, Ness has been doing an exceptional job of kind of nailing the relationship between the kids, the way that they handle, you know, figures of authority, whether they be parental or you know, educational or otherwise. You know, the kids go through this. They're in the middle of the underneath. And April and Ram share a kiss, and as they part, you see the camera focuses to the background, and there's the Shadow King. Ugh, teenagers. You know? So, I mean, he catches all these little moments. But when it came to the mom and the dad character in this one, it still didn't feel 100%, and I'm not quite getting it.
I think it's more the dad than the mom,
yeah.
And it's the mom reacting off of the dad not being well portrayed.
Okay.
I don't know if I buy the dad's story. Like, I feel like it should have just been, you know, he was drunk and caused an accident more than whatever intention he might have had.
Mm. Yeah, the murder-suicide attempt or what have
yeah.
you. I don't know. Yeah. I do think the beat and the pacing was right for his call-out moment to her about the don't be me, I don't even want to be me. I think that was well done. And he worked in there as a kind of a comic foil from moment to moment, but I guess it was just the interstitial moments that where it just seemed a little odd.
Yeah, I mostly just kept hoping he would go away.
Should have been a casualty in this episode. Keeping it real.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. He was just, it almost seemed like he was trying too hard to be funny, but it was supposed to be serious at the same time, and it trying to walk a middle ground that just did not exist, and you either needed to be solely serious and repentant or goofball funny, and you can't do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Right, he's coming in as the hated character. He can't be the comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, I mean, if he's really that kind of schlumpy and dopey, he probably wouldn't have been the romantic interest in anyone's life either. I couldn't click with it. Unless he was being one of those extremes. So,
yeah.
I don't know. In general, though, I think, and with the mom, I mean, we talked about this too, but the, you know, oh, she's going to have the miraculous recovery. Do we really need that? I think I like the fact that they had a, you know, a character with a disability that was.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't feel like they had to walk back from it. But apparently now they're literally going to do that.
I like the fact that she called April out on it and was like, you know, that was a violent thing that you did. And I had gotten to a point where I was okay with my life the way it was. And you didn't ask if this is something that you should do. You just did it. And I mean, she accused her of, you know, of messing her life up basically by healing her.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that, as you know, it wasn't just this, hey, you made me walk again. Everything's hunky dory now. And it was something that's like, you've drastically altered my life, and that's not cool just doing that on a whim.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that it was done using a questionable evil shadow magic, which may have repercussions.
Yeah, they brought up she's connected to the Shadowkin now. We don't know the extent of that connection, but she's connected somehow.
I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's all going to work out hunky-dory.
What could possibly go wrong?
But I think, in essence, through this whole thing, and I started noticing it in previous episodes, but it really kind of came to the forefront in this one, Mateus is the unsung hero of this entire series.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, do you think he's going to make it through the season?
I probably not, no. He is going to be the painful loss. That's my prediction, is that... And it's going to push Charlie so far. But in order to do that, he has to be even further invested. So we have not even seen the best of Mateus yet, as far as I'm concerned.
That would be kind of interesting to see Mateus bite it at the end, and then Charlie and Quill basically switching roles.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And her trying to be the voice of restraint.
Yeah.
I don't know. But there's a drawback to that, though. I mean, as much as you would think that, you know, within the overall arc of the story of the series proper, that would be an impactful death. And we've already learned from Ness that he does not shy away from, you know, offing characters right in front of you in gory detail.
Mm-hmm.
But their relationship is something that the show, it's one of the feathers in the show's cap that's well realized. It just is, you know, and it doesn't make any apologies and it doesn't make any explanations. It's just, okay, this is going all around you. You just never had the privilege of being able to see the normality of same-sex relationships portrayed like anything else on screen. So we're just going to put it there. We're just going to say that this is just like any teen love story. And if you take that away for the sake of the storyline, that may fall into trope territory, which I know Ness doesn't want to do. He's been pretty vocal about wanting to avoid those kinds of circumstances. So that would work against that prediction. So I honestly don't know.
My only reason for suspecting that might be the case going forward is that he still seems like he's not exactly a part of the core group. Like he's kind of an ancillary participant to the main group. And because he doesn't feel like he's 100% in there right now, I'm wondering if there's a reason for that, and it's that he's not going to remain a part of the group.
Well, I think he's made a considerable step forward in this episode alone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he became the catalyst for the solution path by doing his little, you know, the no-look text, which, I'm sorry, that's a Michelin Impossible skill right there.
Yeah, you can't do that with the touch screens. Yeah, back when we had the tin key, you could. But.
All right, two buttons down, three buttons over. Got it.
I got to click the 5-4 times.
You know, L-M-N. Jeez. But he's also, he was obviously Charlie's moral compass in having those, you know, how many times did he say, you know, you don't want to be the monster?
Yeah.
You know, that term kept coming up over and over and over. And then the thug, you know, beating, you know, Dorothy over the head with the candlestick. It was Mateus in the living room with the candlestick.
Yeah.
Even with a gun, you should never turn your back on an angry Pole. Shout out to Poland, baby.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I kept on trying to figure out who you were referring to when you said Dorothy, because in my head, she's like, I kept referring to her in my head as Umbridge.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. But I love the actor's name is Pookie.
Nice.
Yes. Look it up.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. But we did find out that whatever organization she's a part of, they're not part of UNIT.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And she, at least, is not a robot.
Yeah.
But they're not above so using robots. Whole,
you got to wonder, I mean, when you come up with a sort of a... I hate using the term shadow here, but a shadow operative kind of organization like this, mm-hmm. you know, pun really not intended on that one, but of that scale, you got to wonder if Ness ran that one past Moffitt and said, all right, is this something, you know, if I go working this angle, is this going to fit into the grand scheme, or is this going to conflict against the, you know, the, well, hell, the shadow proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got an established celestial police agency out there, you know, but this is apparently not involved as far as we can tell, because the Shadow Proclamation seems pretty on the up and up.
Yeah.
This group, you can't really tell what their intent is.
Yeah, we don't have nearly enough information yet.
Mm. I mean, based on what she said, it seems to be protecting, well, kind of protecting the school and not caring as much about collateral damages or pesky things like rights.
They seem in the vein of Torchwood proper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, outside of Hub 3. Yep. Yeah.
But, you know, my only thought is she had said, oh, they wanted to see how they would do on their own when they asked, why didn't you help before? It's like, you know, while you were letting them figure that out on their own, people died. Like several over the last few weeks.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Quantifiable casualties.
People are always better than everybody.
So does that mean you're going to chalk that up under predictions that we're not done hearing from the governors this season?
Oh, absolutely not. I think this was kind of our introduction to them, and I would imagine they're going to have a significant role going forward somehow.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be something we keep getting information about, and I seriously think that the Shadowkin are going to be our main villain leading up to the end of the first series, and then you know, once we solve the Shadowkin problem, then the governors are going to step up and really reveal themselves to be, either a force for good or more than likely the main villain for, you know, moving forward.
Mm, okay. There are 8 episodes in the season, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. I would imagine 6 and 7, we get nothing on the Shadowkin. And if they're coming back this season, it'll be for the finale.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. You can see that.
I'm not going to put a quarter against that because I don't think that's going to happen. But.
Well, we'll just have to see.
Right. Yeah, so. We will know at our pace. We will know in 6 weeks. We're going into this every other week. So,
yeah. Whose genius idea was this?
Ah, well, you know, yeah, but classic Who takes a long time to go through.
Even skipping episodes just to piss you off.
Oh, and it does.
All right, so we've got more stuff from Elihu to talk about this week, don't we?
Yes, we do. We were fortunate enough to meet Jeremy Raddick at Elihu this past year, known as Gareth in the 96 Doctor Who movie or telefilm. So now that is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, we got the chance to sit for a little bit with Jeremy and get a little insight on his past coming into the show and proving to be a super fan and how that works out for casting. Hint, hint, do your research. his present and his future. So here you go. This is Friday morning, day one, technically, of LI, who you came in yesterday.
Yeah, flew in yesterday, landed right after Donald Trump landed at LaGuardia. I screwed up my voyage in, I can tell you.
We're going to consider you the better arrival.
Sure.
We are joined by Jeremy Raddick this morning, who is going to be speaking with us on a number of opportunities over the course of this weekend.
Absolutely.
We will just put this out there at the start. Honestly, do you have any idea what you're in for this weekend?
Slightly, a little bit. I mean, I've done a couple conventions before, one in Wichita and one in Oklahoma City, but nothing like this.
Okay.
Nothing purely Doctor Who related, and nothing with as many troublemakers as there purport to be here. So,
well, the authorities stay close.
Yes, they should. They should.
Now, obviously, we're gonna have a chance to discuss these things at greater length on some of the panels through the weekend. But your character became, in many ways, kind of the point of identity for a lot of American audience members.
Wow. Okay.
As far as it's kind of recognized, because he, as the U.S. audience, were seeing this strange man for the first time, and trying to comprehend the otherworldly lunacy of him. Now, did you know anything of the show prior to being cast in the film?
This is a funny story, because not only did I know the show, I was a gigantic fan. I had the videos, I had the books, And at that time, you know, fandom had to rely on basically Doctor Who magazine to know what was going on. So I didn't know it was coming. I was working as an actor in Vancouver, and I was actually producing and stage managing a series of plays. Mm-hmm. And a fellow actor came in, and he said, I auditioned for this weird thing. It's called, I don't know what it's called, but it's like Sherlock Holmes in space, and he's got a phone booth, and it travels around. And I was busy with a million things, so I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I went, hang on. I said, was it Doctor Who? And he said, yeah. So I called my agent and I said, hey, I'll be a potted plant. I'll be a chair. I will be anything that they need me to be. Yeah, I will do anything. You just got to get me in this.
Right.
And the sad fact is the casting agent didn't want to see us because they'd already done a round of auditions. Mm-hmm. She's like, I just want to call back the people I know. And my agent said, listen, who else? Like, how many times have you had to explain the concept of the show to anybody auditioning? And she goes, oh, my God, every time I have to explain what this show is. And my agent just said, you'll never have to explain anything to him because he's going to get every joke. He's going to get every reference. He's going to know how to react. And she said, okay, come to the audition. I can't guarantee I'll see you. And luckily, I was able to audition. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey Sachs cast me and the casting director cast me. And then 20 years later, here we are still talking about it.
Now, there you go. 20 years later.
Yeah.
How do you think Gareth turned out?
I think we know after
meeting having his eyes open to all this.
Well, I mean, we know how he turned out. He saves the world, which is, I thought, pretty amazing. He winds up devising some way of predicting earthquakes and saving the world. Granted, if he listens to the doctor and skips the third question on his poetry midterm. And that's what I think. That's what I choose to believe he's done. Now, if anybody wants to write some fan fiction or write Stephen Moffat and say, hey, what's happening with Gareth? I'll come back. That's fine.
You have to chat with Nick Briggs for some
right.
big finish
yeah,
work.
Exactly, I should.
He'll be around this weekend. Now, we will definitely be discussing this tomorrow, but what is exactly the spirit behind Capeless Crusader?
Okay, well, Capeless Crusader is the website that I write for now. It does comics and film reviews, mostly related to the comics industry, but it's about more than just news and clickbait. It's about comics and context. So it would talk about the social issues and political issues and some of the sort of underpinnings of the industry. So if we're going to write an article about comics, we're going to write about how it relates to the real world and the issues involved. Now, having said that, it's still pretty fun. I wrote a satire article about Captain America urging people to vote and being like a grumpy old man and stuff like that. So there's lots of stuff still fun. It's going to be a place for people to have great discussions and people who don't necessarily agree to come together and read about comics and and science fiction and all sorts of things.
Absolutely. But but always done with the spirit of turning it back towards a societal lens.
Yeah, always about context, right? Like that's what we say. It's comics in context. Mm-hmm. So it's always about, you know, not just, hey, that's really cool, but also about, hey, you know, this represents or speaks about something or has an issue that we can all discuss and hopefully makes it a bit more meaningful and you know, just a bit more complex than your average kind of news and reviews site. So that's what we hope. That's what we aim for anyways.
Excellent. Yeah. And in terms of some of the more recent readings and publications, what are some of the titles right now, or I should say maybe arcs within some of the more well-known titles that you think really have an interesting finger on the pulse?
Well, there's lots of great ones. I mean, right now they just started Occupy Avengers, which is a new Avengers book starring Hawkeye, who's kind of a fugitive now and going around and getting involved in more at the ground level issues. Mm-hmm. Also, of course, there's how explicit can I get? There's a comic called Bitch Planet. I don't know if your readers know.
You're
about
all right. You're within bounds.
Yeah, Bitch Planet is by Kelly Sue DeConnick, and that's an amazing feminist. Particularly now, granted who our new president-elect is, I think it's a good time to read feminist books and books about feminism. So if any of your readers are interested in that, that's a tough book, but it's a great book. It's really well written. And, you know, anything that there's a Canadian writer named Jeff Lemire. He writes for Marvel right now, and his Moon Knight book is really strange and weird, and it's about mental illness, and that's another really great book. And all those books are fun, right? They're not like, ugh, I'm reading homework.
Right.
They're all really a lot of fun. So
excellent.
Those ones.
That's definitely within Haley's wheelhouse. She's the
great.
She's the comic aficionado in our
we'll have lots to talk
Hapless
about
gang. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us.
My pleasure.
We'll be sure to talk with you through the weekend.
Great.
And, and that's it. Cheers.
Great.
I I wanted to include this one because I thought this was completely an apropos little moment where Doctor Who steps back into the real world, sort of shines his light back on reality here. So PCAP was on the Andrew Marr show, and for those unfamiar, British talk series, and they were discussing, obviously, the upcoming Christmas episode, which we are now a matter of mere days away from.
Woo. Yay.
He took a moment as the interviewer was referring, had pointed out to him that Theresa May, the new prime minister since Brexit, has stated that she is a fan of watching the special, not necessarily a fan of the show, but did say that, you know, she made a point of watching Doctor Who on Christmas evening, and then, you know, if it's possible, she lines up an Agatha Christie story to watch afterwards. Isn't that nice? And Mr. Capaldi said, well, you know, he considered it, you know, a pleasant surprise to find out that she was, you know, a fan of the program, at least in that capacity. And he hopes that she takes the message of tolerance, kindness, and compassion to heart.
Wow. That, is it just me, or does this seem very reminiscent of the whole thing with Hamilton?
Just ever so slightly.
Just a touch. Love it.
You'll be back. So yeah, that's a nice little piece included there. We do also have some general, this is all, I think everything we got lined up today is all
good news.
Feel good news, thankfully. This doesn't happen often. We rolled the dice three times, three good pieces of news. What was our next little nugget of goodness?
Well, you know, one of the things that's come up recently with the, you know, the news that Moffat is leaving the show and everything like this is that obviously the rumors always fly around about, you know, the Doctor leaving, and is, you know, is this going to be the end of Capaldi's run, and they're, are they going to, you know, basically do the whole thing that they did with Matt Smith, a new showrunner, new Doctor, new, you know. So it, there's been some cause for concern over that, but Peter Capaldi has come out and said that he does not have any plans to leave the show right now. You see, where's the exact quote? He said, I don't want to escape the idea that I'm Doctor Who. It's finite. I won't be Doctor Who forever. So there will be a day when people don't come and say hello. And then he goes on to talk about how, you know, how much of a fun role it's been. But he's not planning on, he hasn't come out and flatly denied it, but this is the closest we've gotten to that.
Yeah, well, we knew in previous interviews that he had said that he was wrestling with the decision because he doesn't want to overstay his welcome, and he wants what's best for the program all along, which speaks to the heart of his devotion to the program in its entirety. Mm. But that he was trying to walk that line between, you know, I don't want to give this up because it's all I've ever wanted to do.
Exactly.
And I may not forever be the best person to carry this forward. So, you know, which is absolutely understandable, commendable
that
he admits to this wrestling within his soul. But as far as everything I'm getting from this, it sounds like he has decided that that this is still his program, that he has work yet to do.
He is still the doctor.
He has decided within his heart of hearts that his time is not yet done. So, one bullet dodged.
Yeah, thank goodness. But then the last little bit of news that we've got here, this gave everybody a massive happy this week.
Yes, because life is like a fairy tale here in Duckburg.
Yeah. Life is like a hurricane. Oh, anyway.
Hurricane. I like fairy tales.
Well, it turns out that Disney has decided to remake the classic cartoon DuckTales, and they have put together a hell of a cast. I mean, if you look at the cast list on this thing, it's a who's who of character actors and voice actors that just, I mean, they've got everyone from like Community and Saturday Night Live and Scrubs and like all kinds of goodness in here. But then you come to, you know, arguably the main character of DuckTales, which is Scrooge McDuck. And who are you going to cast as, you know, this Scottish duck that, well, why not somebody who sounds so irredeemably Scottish that everybody can't help but
Craig Ferguson.
Exactly.
Michelle Gomez.
Michelle Gomez is Scrooge McDuck. Take my money now.
Well, David Tennant will be starring as Scrooge McDuck in the Disney XD remake of DuckTales. And this is they've put out one video, which is the cast singing the theme to DuckTales. And you can tell that they're holding back, because at the point that they finally introduce David Tennant, it's just like this climax moment. And it's brilliant.
They give him some of the highest register lines in the entire song, so he's screeching at the top of his lungs.
But I know when this came out, I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was like, I've had the song stuck in my head all day long. And she comes up and says, well, I don't want to watch it if it's going to be stuck in my head. I'm like, yeah, but you get to hear David Tennant in his sexy Scottish brogue singing. She's like, okay, valid point. Let me go see it.
I think I woke up at around 4 this morning with the chorus in my head. And I thought, God, this is never, ever going to go away.
It really isn't. It's never
going to go away. Tales of daring, do bad, and good luck tales. I just, God damn it. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, what? Are the lyrics quite right? Do I have that line right? No. I'm not going to unlock my phone and look up the lyrics to DuckTales theme song at 4 o'clock. I'm not going to do that. I did it.
He did it.
I had to know.
I don't know the words.
I was never really, really huge on the show. I mean, Jay, you refer to it as a classic. I don't know if I would consider it but it was definitely popular. I mean, I kind of equate it with, what was the other one that was running almost simultaneously with another Disney release at the time? Was it the Chip and Dale had their thing, right?
It was Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. There was,
right.
What was it, Tailspin?
Tailspin, yeah.
And then...
That one I think I knew a little better.
Then Darkwing Duck was kind of a pseudo spinoff from DuckTales.
Like it was, yeah, but I love the comedy on that one.
Oh, yeah. No, that one was great. But I don't know. DuckTales, it definitely had its high point somewhere in the middle. Like okay. It was a little bit slow taking off. And then I don't even know how many seasons it had, but like somewhere in the middle.
Well, it went from 87 to 90, so probably like 3 or 4.
Okay, yeah. So like probably... You know, season two, like towards the end of season two, it really hit its stride because they introduced like Gizmo Duck and some goofy stuff like that. And it was,
yeah.
And then, okay. Like, towards the end of the series, they started getting into like time travel stuff that just went way off the rails, and it just kind of it hit a wall. But
okay, but this was towards one of the closing points of the classic Saturday morning cartoon era,
exactly. Yeah, right?
Before we got into the after school. Cartoon wave that really took over from that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I had was the after school, and not even cartoons as much. It became a lot more live action stuff.
Yeah,
right. Saved by the Bell and
Power Rangers.
Well, I mean, just like, you know, Power Rangers and that ilk of stuff.
Gotcha.
Okay. Kind of replaced cartoons a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to see that this is getting a second wind on this.
Yeah.
Because I know, especially when they do these kind of things, when they revisit them, you know, a full, you know, 15 years yeah, after?
Yeah. So 25 years.
Yeah.
25 to 30
years. Almost 30 years.
Yeah. That they're gonna put a lot of that two-layered humor into it.
Exactly, because
they realize that more than half their audience is seeing this, going, I totally remember this show.
Forcing their kids to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I flat out told my kids, I'm like, I'm half tempted to get cable again just so that we can watch the show.
Disney's got a good streaming service, don't they?
Yes, XD actually is pretty reliable. Yeah. Yeah. And you've got it right there on your Apple TV or your Rokus and things like that, too. Yeah. So, yeah. So that we can explain to an entire new generation why these ducks don't wear pants.
How come but they do wear coats.
Yeah. How come they're not naked if they have a jacket on?
Yeah, when Donald Duck takes off.
Hey, the sign said no shoes, no shirt, no service. I got a shirt. Shoes.
I always loved it when, like, you know, Donald Duck would lose his shirt and then cover his crotch. It's like, what the hell?
So we hope you've enjoyed this Doctor Who podcast that we've been doing this week. Remember Doctor Who? This is a song about Doctor Who.
This has been episode 213 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, April sharing a heart with a murdering alien, and, well, it looks like she cut a hole in the world and is trying to kill him.
Yeah. That can work out fine. And this is Kira saying, if you think about those sentences, not one of them makes any sense.
And this is Haley saying, there are still men that won't listen to women that are smarter than they are.
We'll see you guys next week.
Awesome. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio.
Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2016.
Is Haley frozen or is she reading?
No, I'm ready.
Okay.
Wait. I'm Christmas shopping.
Jesus, Mally. You've got the intro.
I'm ready when you guys are. You were talking.
No, we're waiting on you.
To fill the dead air.
Welcome to episode 213.
We like podcasts.
I feel like Jay's got like 6 weeks of intros to make up. So
just give everything there.